Shmuel Bet. We're in Perek Aleph. We saw a few of the first sentences. We're up to Pasuk Hey. The first four Pasukim, as we saw in the Sefer Shmuel Bet, discussed how David, coming back from defeating Amalek, encounters a person. And the actual verses do not say who this individual was, but we saw the very first Rashi in the Sefer that said this was no one other than Doeg. And we had problems with this interpretation for various reasons. We're going to go through the Pesukim and see why it may be a problem that it was this individual by the name of Doeg. And therefore some interpret that it was not Doeg, but rather Doeg's son. Regardless, we're going to now see this person that David encounters, a very detailed description of what happened with regard to Shaul and his death on the battlefield. So with that said, let's begin with Pasuk Hey. Vayomer David El Hanar Hamagidlo. So David turns to this Nar, this adolescent, this child who was speaking to him. And he said, Eich Yodata, how do you know? Ki Mei Shaul Beyonus and Beno. How do you know that these two great people died?
Now, the question comes up, where before it said Ish and it says Nar.
Correct. So that's one of the problems. That if it was in fact Doeg, the great Doeg, you wouldn't call Doeg a Nar. Certainly not a Nar. Therefore, Nar could therefore mean it was Doeg's son. Makes sense. A younger person. But to speak to him in such a way. But even more difficult, as you said, is that Pasuk Bet says that he was an Ish. He named Ish Ba'amin Hamachana. And now all of a sudden he's a Nar. Well, it's possible it depends on whose perspective it is. Maybe he felt like a powerful person, but when David spoke to him, David looked upon him as a Nar, as someone who was kind of foolish. Why did this person think he was so great? Because after all, we're going to see that he's going to report that I killed Shaul. I killed Shaul. So why is that a good thing? So if you didn't know any better, all you knew was David being, his whole life, being chased after by Shaul, you would think that this would be the greatest news. So he maybe walked in there thinking, I'm an Ish. I'm the man.
He's a hero.
I'm a hero, exactly. After all, I killed your archenemy. But as we're going to see, David never felt this way. Unfortunately, he didn't like the fact that he was being chased. But he, with numerous opportunities, would never lay a finger. He rended his garments. He tore his clothes. For that, he was even punished, which we read about actually in this week's Haftorah, that he was not warmed by any garments. It's the very first sentence in this last week's Haftorah. But he never physically harmed the king. So therefore, David looked upon him as a Nar. So maybe that's the idea. He looked at him as an Ish. I'm an Ish. I'm the man. I'm a hero. But in fact, he was really foolish. He acted as a Nar. Now, we would want to interpret this that it was Doeg, we can maybe understand another reason why he was a Nar. Mentioned a couple of years back, a very interesting medrash, famous medrash in the end of Parshas Noach, that discussed the story of the Ur Kasdim, that how Avram was cast into the fiery furnace because he was unwilling to worship the idols in the home of the palace of Nimrod. And his brother Haran, at that time, was asked, are you on his side, or are you on this guy's side? So the Rashi brings down the Medrash at the end of Parshas Noach, that Haran said, I'm going to wait, let me see. If miraculously my brother is saved, I'll be on his side. If my brother gets burned to a crisp, all of a sudden I'll start believing in our father's idols, as well as that of Nimrod. Of course, Avram was saved, miraculously. Haran walks into the fire and is burned. He dies. That's how Haran died, and that's the reason why Lot, who was his son, Hong, is constantly by Avram, because after all, what else are you going to do? You're going to take care of your nephew. He has no parent anymore. He was an orphan. Anyway, but we see from this story that sometimes we choose. We want to, I'll be with you for a few minutes, and then when things aren't good anymore, I'll shift gears to you. So, if this was Doeg, Doeg was a person just like Shaul, constantly was after David, wanting to kill him. And when things were going very well for Shaul, what does Doeg do? I'm on this side. Now all of a sudden, this man starts showing allegiance to David because Shaul's dead. That's a nar. That's a childish thing to do. A person who is unable to make decisions and to be able to stick to their beliefs, but rather someone who constantly shifts to the direction of when things are going well. That's the approach of someone who is more of like a nar. If we look at the Mesudas David discusses the significance of the question of, well, David. Eich yadata, he said, how do you know? Because Shema Omed O Mepi Hashmua. Maybe you were standing there, or maybe you heard about it. In other words, David wanted to know, was it that you actually saw this episode of the king dying, or is it through rumors? And we know, like the telephone game, you say one thing, you go around the circle, you get something completely else. So who knows if what it, you saw, whether you saw it, maybe you just heard about it, and it may not be necessarily true. So we look in the English also on page 199, Eich Yodata, the Abarbanel says, did you see them die, or did you hear about it from others, which is what the Mesudas David says as well, in which case, perhaps the information may not be accurate. So I want to know, are you an eyewitness? If you're not an eyewitness, then I may not really believe you so much.
Why is it with an aleph? Ramon is with an ayin.
Where is this?
Shema Umad. It's with an ayin. Not an aleph. Maybe it's Mumar.
I'm not exactly sure. I guess maybe that's not the right word. Flintstones. Okay. Pasuk Vav. I don't know. I'm not sure. But David certainly was concerned whether or not it was actually, he's an eyewitness. And we're going to see right now in Pasuk Vav, unless he's lying, which is possible, he certainly was an eyewitness. Pasuk Vav, Yomer Kanar Amagidlo, so this Nar responds, interesting, again, he sticks to that title of being a Nar, Nikro Nikresi Bahar HaGilboa, that I Nikro Nikresi, Mesuda Sion says, that means Moloshin Mikra. I just happened to be in this particular location. V'hine Shaul Nishan Al Chaniso. And Shaul was there. Nishan, says Mesudas Sion, Nismach, was supported or lying on his spear, which, as we recall, he actually died not by the spear but by the sword, which may indicate that he really was either lying or he didn't really get a good look. V'hine Harechev Ubali HaPrashim Hidbikuhu. And the Rechev, the chariots, and the Bali HaPrashim translated Mesudas Sion as Haragilim Harbe Brachiva, all those who were walking, also the cavalry, they were Hidbikuhu. Ratzalomer says Mesudas Sion, Bal Karvel, they were coming closer and closer to him. Okay, so because of this, obviously he was going to be killed shortly. Can someone shut that door? It's just making a lot of noise. I apologize. Thanks. So That's the beginning of his discussion. That I just happened to be along the road, which is always very fascinating, because this, as we saw before, is someone from Amalek. We're actually going to see it again right now, that he testifies that he is from Amalek. And when it comes to the famous reading on Parsha Zachor, it says, Asher karcha baderech, interesting. When Amalek always, he happened to be chanced upon on the road, which is the same language over here, that Nikra Nikrasi, which, what, was it really by chance, or are they really waiting for their opportunity to pounce? Exactly. That's really the truth about what Amalek is. But it's, again, it's fascinating. The Mel Moyes points out that it's the exact same language that someone from Amalek points out. I just happened to be there. Probably not. Now, we mentioned over here that it so says a spear as opposed to a sword.
Then it wouldn't have been Doeg. If he was from Amalek, Doeg wasn't from Amalek, was he?
Well, we're going to see that maybe he was a descendant of Amalek, and maybe he converted, possibly. It's possible.
Doeg.
Yeah. We'll see that on the next page.
Where do we know, where is it even mentioned that it might be Doeg? From where do we know that?
Well, Rashi brings it down. Rashi, the very first Rashi, you see that? But we did mention that Rashi, you know, goes out of character and says, "Dena miyoshev alibi."
I don't like it.
I don't really think that makes sense. But that's what he
quotes the Pasuk.
Right, yeah. Right. So there is a textual source for it, but not everyone agrees to it because of the different problems. One that we mentioned so far, Nar. Doeg was no Nar.
Was Doeg an Israeli? I mean, Jewish?
Yes, sure. Yeah,
so
he was.
It's not Edomi, it's Adomi? Doeg Adomi or Edomi?
Doeg
Edom.
Edom, yeah, Edom.
Yeah, so.
Red.
No, but that would be Adomi.
Edom? Okay, it could be where he came from. Where he came from.
Oh,
right. Edom.
But I like the way it says, the Edom, you showed all he be. It's like we say in English, it doesn't sit well.
It doesn't sit well,
it's
exactly.
It's a very nice...
That's the exact term.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the Radak over here, the Radak points out this idea of the sword, spear. Nishan al-Khaniso, he was on his spear, and then the Radak just has no problem just saying, Mehamakash nafal al-Khair al-Kharba, from the wound, from falling upon his sword. So what the Radak is doing is saying that really he's not contradicting himself. He really did get stabbed. He tried to kill himself by the sword. And then as he was bleeding to death on the battlefield, he was leaning on his spear trying to get back up. So not that he actually stabbed himself with the spear, says the Radak, but rather he was stabbed by the sword and he was just leaning upon it. And if you look at the English over here also on page 199, toward the bottom, it says something similar to this. It says, the young man's account of Shaul's death varies from the scriptural account above the end of Shmuel Aleph. According to the scriptural account, Shaul committed suicide without outside intervention. While the young man claimed that Shaul's attempt to kill himself failed and that he summoned the lad, just happened to be passing by to complete the task. And that was the question. Is he really being honest? The Radak and the Barbanel comment that either the young man's account truthfully fills in details that were left out earlier, or that he was lying in the expectation by taking credit for the death of David's arch enemy, he would be handsomely rewarded by the new king, which of course his reward will be killed.
I find it odd with this necronic Gracie that you happen to be, you don't happen to be on the battlefield.
I think this
correct.
Is not finding things like either he was one of those people want to steal from people who are dying or something.
Right.
Or he don't just happen to be.
He's making up a story.
Maybe he happened to be here, Shaul. That I can understand if he happened to come, but he don't just happen to be on a battlefield.
Correct.
He's telling him the story. I just happened to go by.
Right. That's what Amalek is. I share karcha with that. How he just happened to be. Encountered the Jewish people on the road. But they weren't. They were waiting and stalking and ready to pounce. And that's most likely what he was trying to do here as well, looking for an opportunity. And we'll see that he takes valuables from those who had already died on the battlefield, which maybe what he wasn't just taking from Shaul, he was probably taking from others as well. But once he realized it was a king, so maybe he used this as an opportunity. He was an opportunist, so he wanted to maybe get some rewards from David. After all, I killed your enemy, so you must be thrilled. But we'll see that he certainly was not. Pasuk Zion. Pasuk Zayin Vayomer Li, he said to me, Mi Ata, who are you? But Omar, that this is the person on the battlefield speaking to Shaul. I apologize, I skipped the Pasuk. V'yifen acharav, Pasuk Zayin, V'yifen acharav Vayareini, and he turned, Shaul turned, and he saw me on the battlefield. But Yikrei, and he called to me, V'omer Hineni, and I said, here I am. V'yomer Li, now Shaul was bleeding to death, but he did not commit suicide, asked me the question, Miata, who are you? V'omar, and I said, V'omer 11, I said to him, Amaleki Anochi, I am from Amalek. Now, this is another one of the sources why it did not sit well with Rashi. Because Shaul, how could Shaul ask Doeg the question, Mi Ata? Who are you? What do you mean, who are you? You spent your whole life with him. So,
well, that he had lost so much blood.
Right, exactly. That's how some explain that it still could have been Doeg, but he just was completely, he was dying, so he had no idea what was going on. He couldn't maybe see so well. And he was out of it. So therefore, it's possible it was Doeg. But some people are so bothered with those words, Miata, that they say that's why Rashi felt it cannot be Doeg. Another explanation could be Miata doesn't mean who are you, but which side are you on? Now that you see that I'm dying, whose side are you on? And his response was Amaleki Anochi, which could mean that he's saying, I'm no longer with the Jews, you know, because similar to the way we interpreted the idea of Abram's brother, of Haran, that he was waiting to see, I'll be on the good side. So this is what he does. This is his personality. He waits until, you know, he has an opportunity to be on a good side. So he was asking, Miata, are you still with me? And he said, Amaleki Anochi, I'm not with you anymore. Right? And that's what he does here. He all of a sudden now starts showing up on David's camp, hoping to get on his good side because things are now looking bright for him.
David just conquered the Amalekites, so he just came back from conquering them. So maybe he's saying that, thinking that, you know, I'm one of yours. But actually, he was saying this to Shaul.
He's saying this to Shaul.
But he's just telling the story.
Yes.
Right. Now, to mention that you are from Amalek, especially, as you mentioned, to David, might not be the smartest move. And because of this, the Radak points out something which is unusual, that you see that in this Pasuk, the Kri and the Ksiv are different. The way it's written and the way that it is read are different. Vayomer, with an extra yud over there, or Vayomar. What's the difference between Vayomer and Vayomar is I... Right. So the Radak says like this. What is the significance of this? So the Radak in Pasuk Ches, King Siv. This is how it's written. V'kri v'omar. The way we read it, as we read it, v'omar, which is an I said. But that's not how it's written. V'kri mevor v'ksiv ratzal omar ki acher omer lo ki hu amaleki. After he already said he was from Amalek, v'fi sh'sha'ol harag amalekim lo omar amalek anochi. Because I did not really want to admit that I was from Amalek, and therefore, Yomer means that not that I told him, but there was someone else present that revealed where I was from. Because I would not just openly admit to Shaul that I am from Amalek, because I know that obviously Shaul waged war against them too. And therefore, that's the reason, as the Radak points out, the difference in the writing, the way it's written and the way it's read. I would not have openly admitted that I'm from Amalek because there were probably other Jews around. They could have easily killed me. After all, I wasn't even in the battle. I wasn't a soldier. I was just happened to be there. I was just walking by. So I didn't want to reveal my my identity as such. Okay. So that's the difference. Pasuk Tes. Okay, so Pasuk Tes Vayomer Eli. So this was what happened so far. V'yomer Eli, and he said, Amanah, please stand up, Eli, upon me, Moseni, and please do me a huge favor. You do me a really, really big favor, be very nice to me today, and kill me. Ki achazani hashavat, because I have been overtaken by convulsions, as the Targum explains, I'm shaking because I'm about to die, I'm trembling, I'm shuddering. That's the simple translation that Yonas ibn Uzziel explains. But we'll see the Rashi and other interpretation. Ki kol od nashi bi, because my soul is still upon me, which means I'm still alive, and I'm really not doing too well over here, and I'm bleeding to death, and I'm scared the Philistines are going to come and take me, and who knows what they're going to do to me. So please do me a very huge favor. Please kill me.
Actually, it means let me die, I think. Moses is saying, let me die,
right,
more than kill me.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, that's probably correct, which means to kill me. He wants to be killed, but that's, he's saying, right, let me die. Do not allow me to remain in this way. I need your help to let me die. Very good. If we look at Rashi, Rashi points out at this, these cryptic words that the Pasuk says over here in Pasuk Tes, Achazani Hashavats. What exactly does this mean? That literally translated here is that the throes of death have seized me. But that's not how Rashi interprets it. Hashavats, Medrash Agada, when Rashi, Mishum Avon HaKohanim Shaharag, Bekosuv Bohen Ksones Tashbates. It's written in the Torah with regard to the garments of the Kohanim, the shirt of the Kohen. It's a Ksones, a tunic, Tashbates, which is comes from Mishvachet Zahav, which were the settings of gold. So this word is alluding to the Kohanim. Right. So he's basically saying, the reason why I am dying and I deserve to be killed, I deserve to be killed. It's not that you're even going to kill me and you're breaking the law by killing me. I deserve to be sentenced to death because I killed the Kohanim. And therefore, that's the words that he chose that he was referring to why he deserved to die. And appropriately explains the Me'am Loes that if, in fact, it was Doeg, Doeg was the one that accepted the orders from Shaul to kill the Kohanim, and therefore, appropriately so, he would also be the same vehicle to have Shaul die as well. Okay.
He should also be killed.
He will. Assuming that it's Doeg, that's exactly what we're going to be seeing in a few moments. But absolutely, that's absolutely the truth.
Maybe that's why the Midrash picked up on the fact that it could be Doeg. It's like,
Absolutely.
And do you think this was Shaul's way of doing tshuva by acknowledging that?
Most certainly. I would certainly say so. And that's, yeah, he might have also looked at, assuming it was Doeg, as a tremendous sign that, well, appropriately, of all people, you're here to watch me die, and to assist me in dying, to letting me die. Pasuk Yud. Ve'emod alav va'amusehu. So what am I going to do? He asked me so nicely. So I stood up and I let him die. I killed him. Ki yodati, because I know ki lo yichi achrein niplo. It was pretty obvious. There's no way he was going to live. He was going to die anyway. So I might as well have expedited the process. Next page. Bo'ekach hanezer asher al rosho ve'et sada asher al zara. So I took the nezer from his head. Nezer Rashi, Sudas Sion says, is atara, which is the crown. And I took the etzada on his hands, which is a type of a bracelet of some sort, which also was for royalty.
Was it Nezer a ring? Or Nezer?
Nezer.
Nezer
is, so the Sion at least translates that as an ataru, which is a crown. But we're going to see that not everyone interprets Nezer as such. We'll see that in a moment. The Avim El Adoni Hena, and I brought these things to you, to my master. So the question is, why do we need to know this information, all these little things? So if it was in fact a crown, that would really prove, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that this in fact was the king. Because otherwise he's just making this whole story up. And so who knows if he's telling the truth. Some actually interpret this a more of a homiletical interpretation, that when it says Nezer, it's not referring to a crown as we can envision it, But rather, as the Mishpatot Zahav says, et sada elu tefillin shibazaro, v'nezer elu tefillin shibarosh. He actually wore tefillin, and he apparently felt, you know, these were holy items, you know, and he therefore didn't want it to remain lying on the battlefield, and therefore he decided to take them and bring them to the Jewish camp. And that's how also it's brought down in the Sefer Kilos Yaakov, that it says Al Zaro. It doesn't say Al Zarov, which means that it was only on one of his hands, not on
also
two.
The
right, exactly.
In the
exactly, and just so we don't think this is too completely far-fetched, if we look in Rashi, Rashi actually has this, feels that this is the more suitable interpretation, and says, the very top Rashi on page 200, he says, based on the Targum, Betotefta di al dare, the tefillin, which are on the arm, that's what it's referring to, al dare on the arm. And we know that that word means tefillin, because that's what it says in the Shema. It should be totafos. Totafos, which is a very unusual word. Rashi explains that those represent tot and fos are two different words from different languages, actually. That each one means two, which correspond to the four compartments of the tefillin. Question why they use that word, but nonetheless, that's one particular interpretation that he... And they think this may be appropriate because he was only wearing one. So he has two arms, so I was only wearing one bracelet. So it must be he was only wearing at Sada Asher Al Zaro, because we know that tefillin are only on one hand.
It's strange to think either that he would wear the tefillin to war, or that he would carry it around with him when he went to war.
Well,
so he wears a little bag that he carries with him.
The way that tefillin are worn nowadays is really not the correct way of wearing tefillin. We wear tefillin only in the morning, only during chakras, only in the morning services. The reality is that they used to wear tefillin all day. And the fact that he wore it in battle, I think, I think it's unbelievable, because it shows that the idea of war was not just brute strength and physical strength, but rather it was their connection to the Almighty, to spirituality. So that was an appropriate time that the soldiers actually wore tefillin on the battlefield, which was pretty amazing. I'm not sure if all the soldiers did or he did, but nonetheless, that's the interpretation. And again, because it says tefillin, it says he was wearing on his hands, Zaro, as opposed to his hands. Therefore, it shows it must be probably tefillin, because it's only worn on one hand, which reminds me of the story that there was an episode that once, the true story of a person who went to a Jewish man, and he said, I purchased these things, and I'd like you to buy them. And he saw they were tefillin. This was a non-Jewish man, or whatever it was. And he was able, through this conversation, he realized that he stole them. He stole the tefillin. So the guy said, listen, how much are you charging? And he found out somehow that it's like a few hundred bucks. So you know what? I want to see if they fit me. You know, it's like, you know, you can't just buy something. You have to go to a... You know, you go into the dressing room, you put on the jacket or your shoes. You know, so he put on the phylacteries, the tefillin shel rosh, and then he put tefillin on one of his arms. And then he turned to the man and said, "Where's the other one?" He goes, "What do you mean?" He goes, "For the other arm, right? For the other arm." He goes, "I only have two." He goes, "Ah, this is a missing set." So he ended up getting it for a very, very low price, and the person's name was on it in Hebrew. He did it in order to give it back to the rightful owner. He knew there was no other way he'd be able to get it. So that's the story goes.
Because we were in, I think, Morocco or Tunisia, and we found out that they were selling stolen Torahs. And Joel went to the rabbi of the community and asked, what should we do?
Right.
And they said, don't ever buy anything stolen like that, because we'll just encourage them
right.
to steal more.
That's a good point. It's a very good point. Now... That's tefillin. But if we would want to say it's actually referring to a crown, we have another issue. And that issue is, as we mentioned before, the words of the Rambam. That when it came to Shaul's death, well, he died on the battlefield, and the way that they defaced his body was beyond imagination. As we said, they cut off his head, and they put it by a house of idol worship, and they hung his body. we were able to retrieve his remains. And the Pasuk said, toward the very, very end of Shmuel Aleph, V'yisrafu osam. He burned them, right? And we said, what does he mean they burned them? Not their bodies, but it means all the things that the king owned. As the Rambam tells us, Ein rochim al suso, you're not allowed to ride on their horse. Ben yoshin al kiso, you cannot sit in their throne. Ben mishtamshin bisharbito, you're not allowed to use their scepter. Vol bekesro, you cannot use their crown. Vol beechad mikli tashmishav, nothing that they use. Yukshumes, and when they die, when a king dies, kul nisrafim lefanav, it all gets burned in front of the remains of the king. So with this said, the question is, what is going on if it's in fact a crown? If in fact it's some type of a royal bracelet of some sort, so why does he have a right to give it to the king, to David? It should be burned. It should not be able to be used. And he explains, based on the words of the Rambam, that you can actually differentiate and distinguish some things need to be destroyed and burned, and some things are not to be destroyed and to be burned. Rather, their purpose is to be used for the next king. And therefore, appropriately, when it comes to a crown, why would you want to burn a king's crown? It doesn't make sense. But rather, you would save that crown and give it over to the next king. And therefore, that's something which is allowed. And that would not be burned, as well as...
It's filling. It never burns filling.
That's filling, of course not. Right. Buried. Right. And it's this also is found in Sefer Melachim, the Book of Kings. It says, quote, Shlomo Yoshev al Kisei David Aviv. That Shlomo HaMelech sat in the same throne as David. So we see that we didn't burn these things, because anything which corresponds to royalty, which represent Malchus, we don't burn it. But rather we keep it for the next Melech. But things which do not directly pertain to a king, such as we mentioned his bed, that is burned. That is one of the things that we do to show kavod and respect to the king.
Can we go back just to the Hanar thing?
Yes.
Because I can understand that maybe Shaul didn't recognize him if he was dying and things were like that. But how could David not recognize him?
Right.
I mean, that's strange.
Correct.
Yeah, but it doesn't say David didn't ask who you are.
No, but David says Hanar. And Doeg wouldn't be called Hanar.
But
David didn't know who he was.
But again, like the rabbi said, he
The idea of why he could be a narch, I didn't say, and why he could be foolish, is you've been trying to kill me your whole life, and now you're walking in front of me, you're a fool. I can just kill you. What are you doing? Right? You're a narch. But you're right, there are a lot of people feel that based on those words, it should not be doing. I don't recall if I've seen anyone say that it was both of them, because the Pasuk only mentions it was an ish, there was one person. But it is possible, maybe it can be interpreted as that way.
Does Rashi
for certain
say
words.
Anyplace else, they know Meyusha Bali B? Is there any other...
It certainly is very uncommon. It's.
It really is.
Yeah.
Rashi does is he takes a chazal from chazal. So, you know, he's just recounting what he learned. It doesn't mean that he approves of it. He's just telling you.
Right. Usually sticks to Pashup Shot. He thought this was maybe the most simplistic answer, but still, at the same time, it wasn't so great. Now, some interpret another reason that normally we burn and destroy all things which belong to a king, but things which are found on a battlefield are considered halakhically hefker. They're ownerless. And therefore, because of this, even the crown and this royal bracelet was ownerless. And therefore, it no longer had any connection to the king. But nonetheless, this person claiming it could have the right to claim it for himself, he brings it to the dove. Alright, let's move on. Pasuk Yud Aleph, okay, which is the second line by Chazek David. By Chazek David Bivagadav, which again is an interesting difference between one garment or two garments, but he grabs hold of his garment, vayikra'im, and he rends, he rips them. Vigam kol hanashim asher ito, as well as all the people that are with him. Now, why?
Is he ripping his own garment or the garment of the man?
It seems like he's ripping his own garment, but it's bivagadav. For some reason, it sounds like more than one garment, right? We know what, well, tearing kriya, you think you only rend one garment. Apparently, David, for some reason, ripped more than one. And the Radak helps us out over here. The Radak says, because of she'ein adam chayav likro el yom. It really mentions, the way it's read, written, is his garment singular. Because you only need to rend your outer garment upon the loss of a great, like a king or a dear relative. The kri, but the way it's actually read, is bivagadav, which implies more than one garment. Ki David karm kula, he ripped them all, even his inner garments. Ki kara al shol levado, the kara al yehonasan, the kara al am Hashem. Because there's not just one tragedy here. Yes, the king died. But don't forget, Yonasan, Shaul's child, died. And not only that, a tremendous amount of Jewish people perished on the battlefield. So for all those reasons, he ripped more than one garment. But the Pasuk is at least alluding to the fact that when it comes to one loss, you rip one garment, the outer garment. But when it comes to many losses, more garments are ripped. So up until this point, the fact that he didn't rip his garments showed that he did not necessarily believe him. But once you show me a crown, that really drives it home that it's most certainly was you're telling me the truth. Plus a good bet. Vayispadu vayivchu vayatsumu ad ha'arav. They eulogized, cried, they fasted ad ha'arav until the evening. Al shol v'al yonasan beno v'al am Hashem v'al beis Yisrael kinafu gacharav. Now, as this pasuk tells us, that it makes sense that he ripped more than one garment, because their mourning process was not just for one person. It says clearly, they were mourning because of Shaul, Yonasan, his child, as well as Am Hashem, the whole nation of Hashem, and Beis Yisrael, as well as the house of Israel, Kinafel Becharav, that fell by the sword.
Right.
It doesn't say, but you would want to believe that they did, right? You'd want to believe that they did. But
yeah, no, but they do. They do. They said
for a king.
Noah, when Shishalach died, and then they sat 7 days, and then
right.
Came the Mabul. I mean,
right.
Where did it say that?
There's Rashi that why he waited. So, so could be true. Yeah, you're right. The fact that it doesn't mention the amount of time, I think that's the correct reading. That's probably they just fasted until the evening. But the fact is that they probably sat Shiva for more than just that one day. Now, one of the things that the Netziv picks up is that there's something unusual in the order in this pasuk. It says that they eulogize and then they cry. Now, usually when a person loses a dear relative, you don't start crying only after, well, okay, the eulogy is in 7 hours from now, then afterwards I'll cry. The natural reaction is you cry right away, right? So why does it say, v'yispidu v'yivchu, right? Now, before I answer this question, which is interesting, is last week's parsha.
Right, what about Abraham?
What does it say? How about the order of by Abraham? What does it say over there? It says that Abraham eulogized, then it concludes v'livchotah,
right.
And he cried for her.
That's right.
It's the same thing, which is pointed out of here, which is really not common. And in fact, the language that the Netziv uses, it's not in our packet, it says derech ha'olam, it's the way of the whole world. Techila livchos beinu levenu, that you cry among yourselves. V'yachar kach, and afterwards lahasmid barabim, and then thereafterwards you eulogize. So he gives an answer like this. He says that It was the stirring eulogy which caused people to realize the tremendous loss, and thereafter they cried. Now, my Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yochanan Zwei, gives a novel interpretation, a different interpretation, which I think is quite appropriate, why it's mentioned specifically by leaders, a king in this context, as well as Sarah, who was basically the tremendous leader of the entire world as well. And he brings the example of an episode that happened on November 22nd, 1963. And what happened on November? The Kennedy assassination in Dallas, Texas. And he brings down the example that as Jackie Kennedy Onassis, was a very unusual way that she acted, her composure during the entire process, that she did not cry openly, the media considered that to be a very noble act. And the way that he interprets this, because it's interesting, in the parsha last week, the word lechosa, cry, one of the letters is small. And we mentioned a little bit on Shabbos that the Baal HaTurim points out that Avraham did not cry so much. So why is that a good thing?
It's not,
apparently he didn't cry in public so much. Which we see that apparently just like Jackie Kennedy Onassis didn't cry publicly so much, there's something correct about that. And the idea that my Rosh Yeshiva explains is that when it comes to a personal loss, it's a terrible tragedy for you. But when a great person like a president of the United States dies, or a king, or a Sarah, Shaul, it's more than just a personal loss, it's a communal loss as well. There's two elements. There's the personal loss, and there's the communal loss. So by you crying in a public forum, you are minimizing the communal loss to a personal loss. And therefore, by you retaining your composure and keeping your crying to a minimum, you're showing the seriousness of the community loss. And therefore, that's how he explains of why it says that Abraham specifically didn't cry so much. He didn't cry not because he wasn't sensitive. He didn't cry because he wanted to show it was a tremendous, tremendous loss to the entire community. And therefore, maybe this is the reason why over here as well. It says the order that he eulogized and then he cried. Because it doesn't want to mention, of course, that people on the personal level cried. The crying after the eulogy is the communal crying, is the communal loss. The crying before is the personal loss. So when it came to a king, maybe over here, there was no personal loss, but certainly there was the communal loss, and therefore that's why it mentions that afterwards.
I thought it's two different things. I know it's two different things. One, that people, if it's a loss where David or Abraham are the main people that are losing them now, because Shaul really only had one son, and they don't know where he is at the moment.
Right.
But they look to Shaul, or they look to David, or they look to Abraham, and you're the key person. And if you're going to break down at
right.
that point, then you're going to drag everybody with you.
Beautiful.
If you're strong, then they'll be strong too.
Right.
And then
there
I think of something else. David wasn't there when Shaul was killed. Abraham wasn't there when Sarah died. So maybe they were able to do the hespate after, because they weren't actually there at the time.
Mm.
By the time they heard of it, they were able to absorb some of the shock.
Mm.
And then that's what I just
think. Very nice. Very interesting. That's a good point. Both points. Very good. Okay. I'd like to be able to get down to Pasuk Yud Zayin, not including that Pasuk. Let's see a few more Pasukim. Pasuk Yud Gimel. The Yomer David El Hanar. So David, upon hearing all of this news, with his ripped garments, after having fasted until that evening, mourning the tragic loss of the king. Obviously, this guy is pretty shocked at this point because he thought he would be having a huge party. Instead, here he is fasting. So you can imagine the Nar is probably getting pretty nervous. And this might be part of the reason, as we're going to see, the answer to this question. If you remember David al-Nar, that David asks Hamagdol, the Nar, who is speaking to him, He asked the question, Eimizeh Ata, where are you from? Now, obviously, as the Mefarshim is going to explain, he knew already he was from Amalek. He said already in his monologue that he was from Amalek. So he's really asking a different question. We'll see in a second. But Yomer, and he said, Ben Ish Ger Amaleki Anochi. I am the son of a convert from Amalek. Well, is that really what the word Ger means? Maybe not. Let's see the Radak. Okay? Question exactly, why does he say Ben Ish Ger Amaleki when before he said he's from Amalek? Make up your mind. Are you from Amalek? And the other, what exactly is David asking, where are you from? He already knew he was from Amalek. He already said he was from Amalek. Unless David thought maybe he was lying. But again, as we'll see in the Radak now, you have to ask, how come according to Rashi, David did not know this was Doeg? It's very strange, right? So we'll have to understand that too. But let's see the Radak. Eimi Zeata. Lo Shaw. He was not asking Me'ezi'ah, from which nation you're from. Shahari Shama Mispor Devarav. He already heard this. Ki Amalekihu. He already said, I'm from Amalek. That could not be David's question. El Shama, he was asking a different question. Me'ezi'ah Makam. What place? Kolomer, Im Hoya Ger Bi'artza. Are you living in the land She Eretz Amalek? Are you living in the land of Amalek? Me'ech Nikra El Hamilchama. And if that's the case, how is it possible that you just chanced upon in the war? V'anan, he answers, Ki gam aviv ba'mi eretz Amalek. My father is from Amalek. V'ger be'eretz Yisrael. And I was living in the land of Israel. Because he was wondering, it doesn't make sense. Where? How could you just come upon this land? Where are you really from? That's what he was asking. Where? Not necessarily where you originate from, but where are you living now? But the Radak then gives another interpretation. As you said, V'chein perish kol ger stam. That's one way of interpreting the word ger. Where do you live? Where are you living now? V'ish mehem ger shnis gayer v'shovel das Yisrael. Some explain, no. What he's answering is, I am a righteous convert. I repented, and now I am among the Jewish nation. This is what he was saying. Ben Ish Ger Maleki. He was saying, Shnis Gayer, I converted B'Shabal Das Yisrael. So according to the Radak, there's two interpretations. Either when he says I'm a Ger, it means I'm a convert, I'm a Jew, right? Or the second interpretation is, I'm not a Jew, but I live. Okay. According to the Abarbanel, there's a third answer. What do you mean there's a third answer? Either Jew or not a Jew, right? Like half pregnant, half Jewish. How can there be a third interpretation? It's a beautiful, novel interpretation, which is actually brought down over in English on 201. He says like this. The word ger can mean convert or a resident of Eretz Yisrael. The commentators are divided as to which meaning it was here. That is, according to the Barmanel, the boy was actually an Amaleki, because that's what he said. He said he's from Amalek. But what happened? Once he began to realize that he had not ingratiated himself with David, he lied saying that he was a convert. So initially, I'm from Amalek, and I killed your king, this king. You must be so thrilled. All of a sudden, they see he's mourning, he's crying, he's fasting. You know what? I made a mistake. Actually, I was wrong. I'm actually a Jew. But really, he wasn't. He was just trying to cover himself on all bases. Okay. Two more psukim. Vayikra David la'achad mehanorim. So David went to one of the na'arim. Vayomer, and he said, Gash pigabo, come close. And Pigabo says, Mesuda Sion, inimakas mavis, kill him. Vayakehu v'yamos. And he hit him, and this person died. Vayomer, he loved David. David said, Damcha roishah, blood should be upon your head. Ki picha anna b'cha, because your mouth, anna, says Mesuda Sion, heyik, testified against yourself. Lamer to say, Anohi mosati as Mashiach Hashem. I killed the anointed one of God, namely the king. So since you testified against yourself, therefore you're going to be killed. We look at Rashi, I don't have this underlined, but Pasuk Tet Zayin, Dabcha Roshi, Ein Onesh B'Misoscha El Atzvacha. There is no death upon you except for yourself. You should only blame yourself for this death. And the Masudas David continues along these lines on Pasuk Tet Zayin and says, and this is not underlined, Ratz Lomen is to say, Avon Misoscha El Atzvacha. The iniquity upon yourself, of you being killed, is upon yourself. You testified about yourself that you killed him. Even if it's true that what you're saying is a lie, even if you're just making it all up, that maybe it's just so you'll think that I would be impressed by your words and you find favor in my eyes, that finally you killed my enemy, my arch enemy. Your mouth testified against you, and therefore you'll be killed. And one of the most difficult issues that Mefarshim asks is there's a concept called Ein Meisim Es Atzmo Rasha. You're not allowed to make yourself wicked. And the Talmud actually says something unbelievable. The Talmud in Sanhedrin says that you cannot go up into a court and say, I murdered someone. Right? And therefore... Right. And the very interesting reason. It says, maybe you know it's a capital offense. You murder is a capital offense. So if I walk in there and say, I killed someone, and therefore kill me. The Talmud says that it's possible that you didn't do it, but you're an extremely depressed person and you want to die, but you don't have the guts to kill yourself, so therefore you're going to ask us to do it for you.
That's what they say to some of the police with these people, that they set themselves up because they want to have suicide and they
have my police. Okay, so that's what the Talmud says, because things don't change. And therefore, because of that, you're not allowed to make yourself into a Rasha. That said, the Mefarshim grapple over this issue of why would David be allowed to kill this person in this particular circumstance if, in fact, the only way we know that this is true is based on his own testimony. So we'll conclude with the words over here in the English. There's a few explanations, a few answers, but self-incrimination is something which we generally do not allow. But over here, there was an exception. On page 201 in the English, on the right side, to answer the two questions, which is on the bottom on the left, which we won't get into, says, David's decision was a haras shah, a ruling based on extraordinary circumstances, or an exercise of haras malchus, an exercise of the royal pejorative of to override the law, which... And it's a very smart move on his part. Why is it a smart move on his part? Because if he shows allegiance to the previous king, then he does not allow people to just think and humiliate the previous king. Therefore, what people look at, they'll restore the importance of the Malchus for himself. And therefore, because of this, according to those different interpretations, as well as others you can read on your own, that's the reason why he felt he was allowed to take the life of this person, whoever it was. Stop.